37 meters, 30 meters, 20 meters, 17 meters, standing by for touchdown.
These were the sounds inside of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory near Pasadena, California, on Monday afternoon, as the people working there eagerly hoped that NASA's unmanned spacecraft, the InSight, would nail this really tricky landing on the surface of Mars.
Touchdown confirmed.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
This never gets old.
No, it doesn't.
Congrats to NASA.
I know, it's thrilling. It's so thrilling.
Stuck the landing, did the InSight, which was carrying instruments that will help scientists to study the surface of Mars.
And its inhabitants.
And learn whatever it can about the planet, occupied or not. This is all.
They've never been able to prove it's not occupied. Well.
This is all very inspiring stuff, but our interest in space missions here at The Indicator is not actually about the science. As always, it's about the economics. I'm Cardiff Garcia.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. And technically, Cardiff, economics is a science.
It's a science-ish.
It's a social science.
True.
I think that counts. This is The Indicator from Planet Money. Today and tomorrow on the show, we're going to take a look at the economic history of the U.S. space program with a space economist. Yes, there is such a thing as a space economist.
There's kind of a thing like that. We'll tell you why the InSight's mission to Mars is actually a throwback to the way NASA used to do things. And we'll also explain what the economics of space looks like now.
This message comes from The Indicator's sponsor, Capital One. Capital One's indicator is zero because they offer accounts with zero fees or minimums. And they offer accounts that can be opened from anywhere in 5 minutes. Capital One. What's in your wallet? Capital One N.A. Support also comes from SAP Concur. Employees can submit expenses from anywhere. It's how the best-run businesses make their expenses run better. SAP Concur. Learn more at concur.com/NPR.
Matt Weinzierl is our space economist. Well, sort of. He teaches at the Harvard Business School. He's an economist, and he has a really passionate interest in space.
Matt knows that most people have a fascination with space because of, like, the grand themes. Exploration, the search for aliens, going to the moon.
Exoplanets.
Maybe someday living on Mars with its other inhabitants.
Exactly.
Yeah. Not Matt. He got excited about space for a different reason.
Which is that over the last decade, really almost two decades now, we've seen a real flourishing of a commercial space sector.
See, back in the Cold War decades of the 60s, 70s, and 80s, when the U.S. was racing the Soviet Union to the moon and developing the space shuttle, Matt says the U.S. space program was meant to provide Americans with so-called public goods.
And this is a really important concept in economics. Public goods are defined by two things. First, when someone uses a public good, it does not prevent another person from being able to use it. And second, when a person uses a public good, it also doesn't take away from how much someone else can use it.
So a computer is not a public good.
No, not at all, because I'm using it and you can't. One example of a public good is clean air. My breathing it does not stop Stacy from also breathing it. Or military protection. Just because I am protected by the U.S. military doesn't mean that Stacy is not protected.
Matt gives three examples of the public goods that NASA originally was meant to provide. The first one, national security.
Being able to defend ourselves from space or do something else from space was of critical importance to national security.
The second, scientific discoveries.
So typically, it's hard for the private sector, which is motivated by profit, to do basic research in things that won't obviously be sellable.
The third public good, something you just really can't put a price tag on, national pride.
Which we don't usually talk about as much, but I think if you think back to the Cold War, that was clearly a big part of it, that we wanted to show that our model or our society was, you know, was the better choice for other societies to take.
And as the name suggests, public goods tend to be publicly provided or provided by the government using taxpayer money, because there isn't always an obvious motivation for the private sector to provide these public goods. There just isn't an immediate way to profit from them. And yet these goods are valuable to society. So the government uses its unique ability to direct massive amounts of money into providing those goods. It's a centralized economic model. The government agency, in this case NASA, decides what to do, and it has no competition for how best to do it.
And using this model, Matt says NASA has really accomplished amazing things over the years. Think of the moon missions and, yes, the Mars landings, like the one this week, and also helping to build the International Space Station, which is a research laboratory the size of a football field that orbits the Earth. And finally, of course, there was the Space Shuttle program, which was designed to transport people and stuff into space.
But Matt says, by the early years of this century, NASA was struggling to define what its next mission should be. NASA hasn't put a man on the moon since 1972, and the space shuttle program experienced two tragedies. First, when the Challenger space shuttle exploded in 1986, and second, when the Columbia space shuttle disintegrated in 2003. And Matt says it was a lot more expensive per space shuttle flight than people hoped, and it got into space a lot less often.
In 2004, the administration of President George W. Bush announced that it was canceling the space shuttle program. And this left NASA with a problem. How was it going to send cargo and crews into space to do things like, for instance, supply the International Space Station without a space shuttle program? NASA came up with two strategies.
One was a conventional big government centralized program, which would last many years and cost many billions of dollars. And then on the margins, there was this idea to spend a little bit of money to encourage a more decentralized, private sector-driven space economy. But basically, it turned out that that conventional program went over budget and behind schedule and eventually got largely canceled.
But that little experimental program that involved NASA partnering with the private sector, that worked out.
This program was known as COTS, C-O-T-S, and that is an acronym for Commercial Orbital Transportation Services. NASA issued a report last year saying that the COTS program had been this huge success and a model for the public sector to partner with the private sector. And since then, NASA has launched, no pun intended,
nice,
maybe slightly intended, other partnership programs that are just like it.
Yeah, and the basic way these programs work is that when NASA needs something, NASA tells private companies how much it might be willing to pay for it. And then those private companies get to work on figuring out how to provide it.
For example, last decade, when NASA wanted a better way to send supplies to the International Space Station. And in fact, two private companies, Orbital Sciences and SpaceX, convinced NASA that they could use their shuttles to resupply the space station. So NASA paid them a combined $3.5 billion for a total of 20 resupply flights to the space station.
And there are plenty more examples. Like right now, NASA is asking private companies to propose technologies that they can build and which NASA will pay for that will be useful for future moon missions.
We're going back.
Oh, yeah. Matt says that NASA is more of a partner with such private companies than a supervisor. NASA sets the goal, but private companies compete with each other to come up with the best way to meet that goal. And the private companies then get to keep most of the innovations that they come up with and which they can use to develop new products that they can sell in the private sector or which they can sell to organizations other than NASA.
From an economic standpoint, this newer decentralized model has a lot of benefits. There's competition between companies, which tends to make products better. There's also a profit motive for those companies, an incentive for them to discover new technologies. And NASA gets access to these new technologies for a lot less money than it would have cost to develop them.
Plus, this model is laying the groundwork. Or, Stacy, laying the space work.
Very nice. Very nice.
Not very nice. For the future, when a lot of activity in space will be driven mostly by the private sector. In other words, these partnerships between NASA and the private sector are creating a new marketplace for space technologies where one did not previously exist.
And private companies right now are coming up with technologies that will have actual value, that could be bought and sold for actual money in this possible future.
So what are these new exciting activities going to be? And what weird new economic challenges might these activities themselves create? Matt tells us about them on tomorrow's episode. So tune in then.
I'm excited to hear more about the Martians.
Hey, it's Kat Chow with the Code Switch team. A few years ago, I adopted this cute but also shy beagle mix from a dog rescue. But I noticed really fast that he mostly barked at my friends of color. It made me wonder, is my dog racist? So I went to find out. Check it out on the next Code Switch podcast.